It's been the capital of Spain since 1561, when Madrid became the hub of the mighty Spanish Empire, a cosmopolitan powerhouse and home to some of the greatest collections of art in the entire world. Today, it's a bustling and love-with-life nonstop city that still manages to hold on to its traditions and historic plazas and architecture. But I don't need to sell my three guests on the wonders of their hometown. In the studio now, we have Federico Garcia Barroso, Javier Menor, and Amanda Buttinger, three Madrid-based tour guides who wouldn't dream of living anywhere else. Federico, Javier, Amanda, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the United States, people debate about living in various cities, Chicago, LA, New York City, Seattle, and so on. They have their feelings about the warmth of the people, the cost of living, climate, the character of each place. How does Madrid stack up against Barcelona, Sevilla, and the other great cities? Javier?
It has its own personality. It's been the capital since the 1500s, and I guess that I could define Madrid as the establishment. Changes take a long time to reach Madrid, but that's why you can feel comfortable there. It's not an avant-garde city like Barcelona could be. You just zoom through the streets and you feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, you've lived in Madrid. You grew up in Maryland, I understand, but you've lived in Madrid for over 20 years.
Yes.
How would you characterize Madrid compared to other great? Is there a personality
difference? Feel like Madrid is a very tangible city. You can walk across the old town. You can live in the old town without feeling like you're in the skyscraper area of somewhere like Chicago. The people are wonderful to feel and watch. And you always have to look up in Madrid. There's always something to see in Madrid.
You mentioned a skyline like Chicago. It does have that wonderful, it's Gran Vía, right? Lined with all of these Art Deco skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that big, you know, metropolitan feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very walkable city, isn't it?
It is.
You can walk from the palace to the Prado Museum right through the main square.
Exactly. You go from the metropolitan area with the Schweppes neon sign, and then you walk two blocks over and you're in a quaint little neighborhood with shops and bars and people sitting on benches.
Federico, any thoughts on how Madrid is unique compared to other Spanish cities?
Yes, Rick. I have to say that Amanda is a very good example of what we are talking now. Many American and Canadian friends, they just come to Spain, they just go to different places, they are thinking about settling down there, and finally they choose Madrid, you see. It's a very friendly city, very cosmopolitan, open to everyone. And I have to say, as we tour guides, guiding people everywhere all over Spain, you know, I really, really think, honestly, and I love other places in Spain, that Madrid is absolutely the best city to welcome travelers.
So, Federico, you said cosmopolitan. How is Madrid a cosmopolitan city?
It's a very cosmopolitan city in because of many reasons. Well, obviously, the Latin American community, you see, when they just come to Spain, Madrid is just the gate of arrivals, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important to see many people come from Latin America and also from many other places, from many different destinations, you see. They come to Madrid, they stay there, and we can see that in those restaurants, so many restaurants from every place in the world.
Amanda, you settled in Madrid. Are you a local now? I mean,
I am a local. Yeah. I know the people at the bread shop. I know the people in my grocery store, the lady. I always go to Lucia's checkout, all those types of things. And each little neighborhood in Madrid is like its own village. In my perception, I feel like that's what it's like when you go to each little area has its own character and its own village sense.
So if you say a village, describe that a little more. What's it like to have a village in a big city of several million people?
You say hi to the people on the street. If you go to a bar more than three times, they know what you want. They are your friends. And it's a sense of community in a small area of a big, big city.
So, Javier, I've been in Madrid with you looking at bars and tavernas and so on. And it's just an amazing sort of energy in the tapas scene. In a lot of regions of Spain, you've got your one style. Madrid, it seems to all come together.
Oh, totally. And I was born in the 70s, and I have seen the evolution of Madrid. The restaurant, the bar scene, and it's improving so much. In 2 years, you have a new neighborhood. You have a new street, a new area.
My problem when I write a guidebook is I find the place I really loved and I wish it was the same next year, but it's changing all the time. You have to go back.
It is constant evolution because there is a lot of margin for evolution in Madrid.
A lot of margin for evolution.
A lot of margin for evolution. We were like so back, so behind.
Uh-huh.
For example, Barcelona.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
That there is a lot of room to improve, to change, to make it better.
So you took me to a big theater, a giant classic theater that is now like a food festival. Describe these kind of places.
Mercados.
Yeah.
Now we have all the traditional mercados. that from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., you go to the butcher, you go buy fish, you go buy your fruit, and around 1:30, the new shops are opening, which are little restaurants, like implants inside the
market. In the market, in the farmer's market.
So you've got the butcher selling steaks, and next door you have the man who is grilling the steaks.
Because there's that one amazing scene north of Gran Via that was just a former market, and mm-hmm. it becomes kind of tired. Federico?
Yes, I took you to that place called Platia. Platia, which means actually in English orchestra. It was a beautiful classic movie theater that has been totally transformed
into
an Epicurean center, a gastronomic place where you can actually have Spanish tapas and also food from other places.
So it's like a three layers of former seating for a theater, Art Deco grandeur, a stage, and it must have been 20 restaurants. And then every few minutes they would open the curtain on the stage and there'd be live entertainment for all the diners.
It's really one of the best places in the city. It is the best choice to enjoy Spanish food, and it's not really expensive.
And the name is?
Platia.
Platia. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I'm talking with Federico Garcia Barroso, Amanda Buttinger, and Javier Menor. We're talking about why we love Madrid. Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and Lynn's calling from Coral Springs in Florida. Lynn, thanks for your call. Do you have a comment for our guides?
Yes, I do. I think one of the best unheard of places to visit is the Sarabo Museum. I hardly know anybody that's been there, and it's one of the best things that anybody could ever see in Madrid. It's a Belle Epoque mansion, and everybody could see how the kings and queens lived. That's like a throwaway, but you could really see how a rich person lived in their home. And from the floor to the ceiling, he covered it in all kinds of decorative arts. It's really overdone, but so fantastic to see. It has a ballroom, because if you were wealthy then, you had a ballroom.
Sarabo, C-E-R-A-L-B-O Museum. And
correct.
From the Belle Epoque, meaning before World War One, right? The turn of the turn of the
20th
century.
The wealthy people. And after seeing all of these rooms and the bathrooms, which are interesting, and the kitchens, and you go to his bedroom, and it's as spare as a nun's room. That was his bedroom. But in the end, it is one of the most magnificent things you could possibly go to see in Madrid, as far as I'm concerned.
You know, it's reminding me of the Jacques Mart André Museum in Paris. Another
example of that. They had taste.
And they had taste, and they had money. And this was before World War I, when it was a gilded society. It's also reminded me of the beautiful Gaudi private homes, Casa Mia in Barcelona. And you can tour it, and you can see just what somebody was, a rich person was, how they would live so elegantly. Federico, do you know about this museum that Lynn's talking
about? Yes, it's actually one of those our small secrets in Madrid. We usually talk about...
No longer a small secret.
No longer. We always talk about the royalty, and then we have to remember the nobility also.
Yes.
Some remarkable people in the Spanish nobility, they sponsored those artists, you see. You can feel that philanthropic atmosphere in that wonderful Sarabo Museum, which is located, by the way, not far from the Royal Palace and not far from the Egyptian temple and the Bor. And the garden, not only the building, the garden, it's actually like traveling time. And then you go to those wonderful years of the late 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s. Uh-huh. And it's just like the Belle Epoque in Madrid, you saw in a nutshell.
Hey, Lynn, you know, when you talk about the Sarabo Museum, I also think of the Sorolla Museum. Have you been there?
I have been there, too, and I really had not known who Sorolla was until I went to his home, and he didn't have as much money, but all of his paintings are there. And then you realize that Sargent and he were good friends, and they fed off of each other, and you could see the influence, and that's another unknown, wonderful place to go if you really want to delve into the city and see more than just the highlights that everybody goes to.
Lynn, it sounds like you're a budding travel writer or tour guide.
Thank you. I'm glad to be validated.
Happy travel.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
We're getting stoked to explore Madrid, Spain right now with the help of three professional tour guides who call it home. Amanda Buttinger, Federico Garcia Barroso, and Javier Menor. We have links to our guests with this week's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. Ed's calling from Vancouver in Washington. Buenos dias, Ed. How are you doing?
Hey, buenos dias, Rick. Yes, hey, I have a question. It's kind of a interesting thing. Last year, I was lucky enough to go to Mallorca, and on the way there on the plane, one of my fellow travelers said, hey, you have to try a gin and tonic when you're in Spain. And I thought, well, you know, gin and tonic, that doesn't sound like anything, you know, Spain would be famous for. But, boy, when I got there and I ordered a gin and tonic in a bar, it was quite a ritual to watch the bartender prepare this and, you know, ask me questions about what kind of ingredients I wanted. And so I'd like to hear a little bit more about that and maybe a great place in Madrid to have a gin and tonic and you know, maybe a little bit of the history behind it.
Because we know what to get a caña, a little beer, and we know to get a glass of vino tinto. Federico, what about gin and tonic and other
There are several places all over the city, but in just in the city center, there's a street called Reina, Queen. Reina Street.
How do you spell it?
R-E-I-N-A. Okay. Reina Street. And right there, well, a few years ago, there was just one or two places. Now there is a kind of, I mean, several places where people go there to enjoy that protocol, you know, to serve you those.
So there's a ritual for how to
absolutely
do the gin and tonic.
A ritual about the gin and tonic. And it's a wonderful place where you find there, of course, locals and many travelers, you see, enjoying that.
I had a friend in Barcelona who was determined to take me to a vermouth bar. Mm-hmm. That was very trendy in Barcelona. Is that unique to Catalan, or are there vermouth bars around Spain?
That's my first date with my husband was at a vermouth bar.
Okay, so how do you describe a vermouth bar?
It's an aperitif. For me, where I like to go are the classic wooden bars and old-style traditional tiles and things like that. And you go in and you have a little vermouth and maybe some olives on the side.
And it's
a way to...
little munchies with
yeah,
it.
To yeah, to open up your appetite. And okay, it's a little bit sweet, a little bit
now, I may say
strong.
That gin and tonic has been the drink for the last 5 years, but now we're moving towards vermouth.
Is that right? So the vermouth, because I really enjoyed just the vibe in this vermouth bar. Hmm. But the beautiful thing when we go to Spain, in the United States, we have all sorts of efficiency, but we don't have that abundance of bars that have this elegant sort of patina of age and tradition. And people go there as their parents did almost. And it's got that elegance.
Well, you go into the bar where I met my or had the first date. There are all kinds of people: older, retired couples, people in their 20s, people in their 30s, people with kids.
So Ed, there's a great example of how to relax your way through the end of a sightseeing day in Madrid.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. That's a good idea.
Thanks
I'll do
for
that
your
next
call.
Time.
Okay, happy travels. And James is calling from Virginia Beach in Virginia. James, thanks for your call.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I talk to you many times. I hope to run into you sometime in Europe.
I hope so. Keep an eye out for me.
Yes, I've been to Europe 14 times, usually with groups. And the couple of times I've gone on my own, being an adventuresome senior citizen, I want to endorse Madrid. In 2014, my college spring break, I rented a hostel right down the street from the Puerta del Sol in Madrid for a week. And I found Madrid to be just a wonderful and safe city with laid-back people. I also did...
So, James, hang on. Did I catch that you're a senior traveler and you stayed in a hostel?
Yes, sir. I've done that actually in several cities in Europe.
What's that like to be as old as the grandfather of a lot of the kids in the dorm room next to you?
Well, here's the thing. The times of years I've traveled, actually I went to Paris and Barcelona 4 days each in December, and there's actually only one other person in the unit, in the building.
So you're paying for...
I had a single room.
I love that. In a hostel, you can very conceivably pay for a bed in a room with 20 beds, and it's going to be, you know, 10 or 20 bucks, and you actually have a single with a lot of place to stretch out.
Even like in Vienna, there were three other people in the room. They were graduate students, two of them in my field. So, yes, I've met some interesting people. It's been very safe. Nothing stolen.
Hey, James, did you take any side trips from Madrid that you would have
yes,
people
Yes, I wanted
remember?
To mention that. Yes, since you're there for 7 days, nothing against Madrid, but I planned two side trips. I did take a bus day trip to Segovia, which was wonderful. And on another day of the week, I took a side trip to Toledo. So, I would recommend those as nice, easy side trips to take from Madrid.
All right. Hey, James, thanks for your call. And after you hang up, stay listening, because I'm going to ask our guides to talk about their favorite side trips. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking about Madrid. And a great thing about Madrid is it is the hub of a great country with wonderful transportation that comes in and out of Madrid. If you're frustrated by the trains, hop on the bus. A lot of us are really committed to the trains, but there are wonderful bus connections. And I'd love to just let Amanda, Javier, and Federico each talk about one favorite day trip from Madrid and why.
I think my most favorite day trip is to Segovia. I think you can either take the bus or the train. It's kind of whatever you prefer, whether you take the fast train in and then take a shuttle bus into the town or take the bus directly into more of a central part of town. I think they're both very easy, but it's very magical.
Famous for its Roman aqueduct.
Roman aqueducts.
Its castle. Its romantic castle.
Alcázar. And then also a lot of beautiful Romanesque churches that you can peek in and even just see from the outside to walk
really
off that beaten path.
I really enjoyed the paseo in Segovia, too.
It's gorgeous.
Wonderful. It's like a gully through the town, and everybody's there. Javier?
I'm going to say Segovia as well, but don't make it a day trip. Stay for one night. Because those cities are day trips. And when they reach the 5 p.m., 6 p.m. line, they transform themselves, and they become very different places. So make the effort and spend one night.
How long would it take by bus or train to go from Madrid to Segovia?
1 hour.
And I bet there's a departure at 10 o'clock at night.
Probably.
That so you could. I mean, if you're just a crazy American traveler without much time and you couldn't spend the night, you could actually go in the afternoon and stay
and
until
take one of the last buses, the last trains to go back.
I think so. Yeah. I bet you could get a midnight bus back.
Instead of going early, go a bit later and enjoy the last part of the day.
And Federico, your tip for a day trip out of Madrid?
Yes, there are several places, and they are all quite reachable with a high-speed train. You can go to Segovia, Toledo, Cuenca. That is fantastic.
You can go to Sevilla.
Sevilla, Córdoba.
Way in the south. It used to be a 10-hour train ride. Now how long on the AVE?
2.5 hours, if I'm not wrong.
2.5 hours. You could get an early breakfast, have 8 hours in Sevilla. I mean, it seems ridiculous, but hey, if you've never seen Sevilla. So the point is there are a lot of places you can reach because of Spain's excellent public transportation. When I first went to Spain, no freeways, no fast trains. Now, laced with freeways and laced with bullet trains.
There is also a nice place in the outskirts of Madrid in the mountains called El Escorial. I really like El Escorial, where you see that massive fortress of Philip II, the king in Spain, in Madrid, 1561, and showing to you the power of those Habsburgs. You see, it's a huge fortress, and people are actually quite fascinated about those stories.
Is it fair to say back then the king of Spain was the most powerful man in Europe?
He was, actually. I mean, just think about how that country that is far, 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 far away from Spain called the Philippines. The Philippines were the islands of Philip.
Named after King Philip.
Yeah.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. I have just really enjoyed talking with all of you, getting all sorts of ideas on going back to Madrid. Amanda Buttinger, Javier Menor, and Federico Garcia Barroso. Gracias.
And gracias.
Gracias, Rick.
Gracias.
He grew up above the caves and coal mines of Nottingham in the English Midlands. So it's no wonder Robert McFarlane has been fascinated by the landscapes that frighten most people. It took him 10 years to write his book, Underland, which one critic called one of the most ambitious works of narrative nonfiction of our time. Robert McFarlane is back with us next on Travel with Rick Steves to take us someplace we've never been before, on a deep time journey.